Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% Lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And then I introduced my dog as Baron Vladimir Barkinen and my cat as Meow Deeb from House Cat Trades.
Ooh. Ooh, that's good. That's good stuff.
Thank you. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the show where we talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, sand, flightless bird gangsters, people who are trapped in an underground bunker and made to believe that that's the entirety of humanity, but really there's a lot of more people out there in the post-apocalyptic wasteland. It's everything. Yes. It's anything. You don't know. Thank you, Julie. Sometimes you reach for a joke and sometimes it doesn't work. And other times you find what you've been missing all along. Daniel, yeah. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Sometimes that joke just slaps your hand away when you reach for it. I am still chuckling internally over Meow Deeb, because that's pretty funny. But no, it's I'm good.
I interviewed last week. I interviewed members of the Dune Prophecy cast, and Scruffy the dog was in the background there. Scruffy, get up your head. And I got in a Baron Vladimir Barkinen joke, and the cast members laughed. And then later we came up with Meow Deeb of House Cat Trades, but I didn't get to use that.
That's
one.
That's good. Yeah, I guess you'll have to interview them again in order to drop that one. Or you can save that one for Timothy.
Yes, if I talk to Timothy Chalamet, I will definitely bring it up. But yes, today we're going to be talking about a new show called Dune Prophecy, which is coming out this Sunday, a big new fat Dune show. They're going to air on HBO and Max. I get to see early. Very exciting. Daniel, you got to see Silo early, which is also pretty exciting.
I did. Yes. Yes. I have. Yeah. I'm excited to talk about it too. I have seen the first few episodes of Silo season 2, and I can't wait to hear what you thought of Dune Prophecy, because I'm pretty hyped for that show. More hyped than I expected to be. The last trailer really got me. But yeah, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. There's also been some Westeros news this week. I've been reading a veritable butt ton of books. So many books. So I've got to talk about that later in the show. We've got a packed one for you. Dan, where do we start?
Yes. First of all, hello, everybody. Hey, Chris. Hey, yes. Benjack. Hey, Nicole. Hey, Julie. Good to see you all. You came in a good one, but isn't that always the case? Before we get to our early exclusive reviews of hotly anticipated new sci-fi programs, let's go over some of the latest Westeros dispatches, because it ends up there are quite a lot.
Yes.
We're getting some, none of them like shocking or world-changing, quite a lot of chatter going around lately.
So let's do it in
a bit of a lightning round-ish fashion. No stopwatch or anything, but just some things people have been saying lately about Game of Thrones spinoffs, and the future of both. For instance, HBO executive Casey Bloys, who I think is the president of HBO, leading director of HBO, some kind of cool corporate title, talked to reporters. He was asked about the, so far as we know, ongoing feud between Game of Thrones creator George R.R. Martin and the producers of House of the Dragon. Very short version, George R.R. Martin doesn't like what they're doing with House of the Dragon. He came out and talked about it publicly. He deleted the message, but it's out there now, like pee in the pool, and he can't get it out now in case the board's being asked about it.
Like pee in the pool.
And basically, Casey Bloys said that George R.R. Martin is very important to us. When we put shows together, it's like putting a marriage together. Marriages can be difficult, especially when House of the Dragon showrunner Ryan Condal is making creative decisions and adapting work. It can be fraught, and marriage can get rocky. I would prefer everybody get along, of course, but with the creative process, we are always going to have bumps. That's to be expected. So basically, as far as HBO sees it, the relationship with George R.R. Martin is like a rocky marriage, And it's up to us to decide who's at fault, who's getting the dog in the divorce, whether there's going to be a divorce, whether they're going to stay together for the kids, and whether they can make this relationship work and remember why they loved each other in the first place.
Yeah, it's nice to hear Casey Bloys talk about this a little bit more, because the last time he mentioned it, it was at like a red carpet thing, and he just gave a really quick off the cuff response. So here, I believe this was like a, not a round table, but like a press conference with a bunch of reporters where he was talking about this stuff. The rocky marriage thing feels apt for where we're at now, but you know, you hope that's not the case. I don't know why, but for some reason, reading that made me think of Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann, who are making The Last of Us, just because it's hard to imagine this full metaphor being applied there. Like the marriage part, yes.
Totally could. They have a hot marriage.
They do. They have a hot, functional marriage that is making good television. And you know, part of that is that they're like on more equal footing because they're co-showrunners, which is very different than a showrunner and an author of source material. But interesting to hear Bloy's thoughts on this. Do you think this bodes well, badly? How do you feel about this, Dan?
I think there's no way to know. I think my personal wish is that George R. R. Martin complained publicly and that they took some of his complaints on board and actually tried to change something. But we're not going to know. We shouldn't probably know. It's fine. But I think it's just kind of interesting. Yes. We also got George R. R. Martin writing on his blog, as he does, about meeting Maisie Williams, who played Arya Stark in Game of Thrones, writing, "We talked about, well, no, better not get into that. Don't want to jinx it, but it could be so much fun," possibly hinting at some kind of Arya project spinoff movie, which, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to. They have been talking about that movie rumor lately. Are you going to pick up some kind of book as a visual aid?
I was looking at my Martin shelf behind me and pondering, because I almost wonder, you know, Arya is the obvious thought, right? Like, are they doing an Arya thing? I wonder if maybe they were discussing something else, like
it's very possible.
Some other adaptation, because, you know, he's got a lot of stuff that hasn't been adapted. And I don't know what he would do with Maisie Williams, but I would be curious.
Maisie Williams is Wild Cards.
Oh, God. I don't know. That's the one George R. R. Martin thing I've just not been able to get into. There are so many books, and superhero stuff is a hard sell for me. That's not the only thing. There's more. There's been a lot of Westeros stuff just bing, bang, boom, coming at us rapid fire this week.
Oh, yeah, that's been 2 of 5.
Yeah, Martin also talked about the Iron Throne play. That is the stage play that is telling the tourney of Harrenhal, which kicked off Robert's Rebellion. They've been developing this for a year and a day, for 10 years, for 84 years, however many years, a very long time they've been working on this. But he said that I think this was in his blog where he talked about going to London, that he met with the person making the play.
He said,
I'm not going to do the voice.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm just going to read what he wrote. So he said, "I am told that the show is coming along splendidly. Our team did a run through for the managers of a score of West End theaters before we arrived in London, alas, so we did not get to see it. And the excitement was palpable, we hear. We have not nailed down our opening day yet. Next year, most likely. But it looks as though we will have our choice of theaters." So it sounds like it's looking good. And it sounds like it is coming to the West End in London in 2025. Dan, will you be flying there to see it?
Probably not. I kind of forgotten a bit about this one. It is very cool, though. I would see a Game of Thrones play. I'd probably wait until it came to the United States. But who knows? And of course, it's always worth putting this out there. HBO, Casey Bloys, if you're listening, if you pay for my plane ticket and preferably a hotel and a ticket to the play, I will give it a positive review as long as I get a trip out of it.
Wow.
I'm sure it'll be good anyway.
Scruples. What are those? You in the game of getting to go to plays for free, you give good reviews or you die.
I haven't had scruples since the accident.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Anyway, moving on, we also got Casey Bloys confirming that a Game of Thrones movie is actually in development, that George R. R. Martin is involved. Although he did note, probably it's important to note here, that all this talk of these spinoffs, like Arya spinoff, movie, play, Egg and the Conqueror show, yada, yada, yada. He did underline that, look, people, the only two things we're actually making are House of the Dragon and Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. The rest of it all got leaked, and now he's being asked about it because the leak is out there. And he's like, yeah, fine, sure. We're in early development on a Game of Thrones movie that may or may not go someplace. I feel like there's an impression that they're going absolutely hog wild that may not be warranted, because we have seen they're willing to develop projects internally and then, you know, kill them once they decide it's not worth it to go any further. So I am not worried about some kind of onslaught. He was like, this is all there is. We'll make as many shows as there are worthwhile shows to make. Nothing's got the green light. And whether they're leaked because James Hibbard gets a hold of them, whether they're leaked because George R.R. Martin just can't keep his mouth shut, they do kind of get out there before they're ripe enough to actually share. And I think it's a good thing to remind folks. This is just because something's in development that they're talking about doesn't mean they're going to actually do it.
Yes. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned James Hibbard. I need to walk back something I said last week, because I said a wrong thing when I was talking about the Game of Thrones movie. James did not call James. We're not on a first name basis, even though I call him it on the podcast, or any name basis, really. So I did write an article that you can read on winteriscoming.net about the possibility that the movie is a Doom of Valyria movie, which I do think is possible. But in that, I looked back at an old report that I had attributed to Hibbard. It was actually Variety. So that one got out from a different outlet. For once, it was not a James Hibbard leak, that one. But then Hibbard wrote about it last week, so really, it's all still a Hibbard leak. I do want to answer one comment. So Chris said in the chat that Bloys also said Snow, which is the Jon Snow show, is still a possibility. And I think Snow will be the movie, he said. I do want to say probably not. Here's the quote from Casey Bloys about the Jon Snow thing. He said, we develop a lot of ideas. Sometimes they don't work. We all agreed it didn't come together. Maybe we'll try again. So it sounds like Snow is still like tentatively shelved right now, but they're leaving the door open because they all liked working together. If it came together, they'd probably all be excited to make it. But right now it sounds like, you know, HBO's got that Kit Harington guy on industry. They need him over there bringing in viewers. But yeah, so I still think it's going to be Doom of Valyria, but we'll see.
I agree. Yeah. And finally, speaking of the Hedge Knight, as Chris says, on Seven Kingdoms, they apparently showed a full trailer at this event, which is nice. People liked it, lighter, funnier, which probably means we're going to see it pretty soon. So I'd be on the lookout for that. That is exciting. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I kind of wonder, you know, I feel like the Hedge Knight, the Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, or a Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, it's, I just always wonder with stuff like this, with like the whole George R. R. Martin HBO thing, like, what does it take to get them to listen to him? Because I feel like if a Knight of the Seven Kingdoms comes out and it's more faithful to his book, And like, this is a show he pitched to them years ago that they had to go make Blood Moon and realize Blood Moon was a bad idea before they finally were like, maybe we should just, I don't know, listen to George Martin and make a Dunkin' Egg show. I feel like they could save themselves a lot of heartache just maybe listening a tiny bit more. But I'm excited for that show. I hope you're right and the trailer comes soon.
It feels like it will. I mean, we'll move on in a second to Dune Prophecy and Silo. But I mean, we've talked before about the kind of culture that we're working with. I mean, the reality is that when you turn over your rights to a large company, no matter what kind of company it is, you do forfeit some control. Like, it's unrealistic to think that George R. R. Martin could have absolute control over everything. It's just unrealistic.
Oh, and sure.
The culture at HBO is very, you let the artists do what they do. And often that turns out very well. And other times folks disagree with it. But they're famous for not interfering. That might change as they change as a network. I don't know.
Sure.
As opposed to something like Disney, which kind of has like, you will play by the Marvel House style. And that's kind of an imposition on you a bit. I feel like the HBO folk do have more freedom, which again, is everything in life is a double-edged sword. From artistic freedom to two bladed butcher knives, everything has two sides to it. And yes, it's just working itself out. And I don't think there's a firm answer to anything.
I fully agree with you. And I think I like HBO's approach of giving its creatives the space to do stories. Really, if anything, to me, with stuff like this, it's more a sign of the creative team's, I don't want to say house not being in order, but it varies, right, from one creative team to another. Because look at The Last of Us, which is like, seems like the most harmonious production. You know, the people making that show are very much on the same page. The Penguin, which we're going to talk about a little bit later, is another really good example of this. It did really well, and they kind of had a unified vision going on behind that series. So, I'll be curious to see, obviously, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. And I think Ben Jack is probably onto something here. They said in the chat, I think the trailer is coming out on the Saturday of CCXP, which is December 7th. He said that's when they released the first House of the Dragon season 2 trailer, which was also previewed for press a month earlier. I'm expecting some big things out of CCXP. I believe that the Wheel of Time is going to have people there too.
Finally.
And Yosha Stradowski posted to Instagram being like, see you at CCXP, Wheel of Time season 3. So I think that we're going to get some big announcements out of that in December. So that'll be exciting.
Very cool. I also like Leo's comment, Hedge Knight. Also, really quickly, a sidebar. I like the Book of Calling it the Hedge Knight. I hope that catches on.
It's catching on.
Hedge Knight, Last of Us 2, and White Lotus. What a Sunday lineup. HBO's been kind of killing it lately. Like, The Penguin was great. And now that we can transition, what will take The Penguin's place this upcoming Sunday is Dune Prophecy. I've seen 4 of the upcoming 6 episodes. A bit of a bummer. It's only 6 episodes. That's kind of the way things are going a bit.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, I think it is definitely going to keep that role going. Top line, if you want to know what is Dune Prophecy good or bad, it's good. I'm happy to report that I've watched two-thirds of it by now. I was compelled. I was interested. It's beautiful. It's wonderfully acted. It's not a perfect show, of course. You have to say that because nothing is. But it's definitely juicy, meaty, fun, dramatic, good watching. I've enjoyed it. I think people are going to like this show, which is kind of the basic takeaway from it. But should I go further, Daniel? Do you have any specific questions?
I do have questions. So how did you feel about this did it feel like a continuation of the Denis Villeneuve Dune universe, or does it feel like its own separate thing?
I like that question because I've seen a bunch of reviews that say like, Dune goes Game of Thrones, very got a Game of Thrones flavor. And I'm sitting here being like, you know, I think Dune was already kind of like this.
It
does feel like a Dune show to me. Dune was always about pulling the levers of power. Dune was always about various factions kind of competing to see who can exert the most influence over the Imperium, over the Fremen, over this, over that. And that is preserved. It definitely feels like a Dune show. It's cool. A TV version of a Dune show, which means that we get more kind of ground level character drama back and forth between the people than we would in a movie, where you have kind of the freedom to make it all about, not all about, but like more about the landscapes and the feel and the epicness. It does have to be brought down to earth a bit, because we have to have like characters that we can just follow in scenes, watch as they talk. And this show has some good ones. It's lit. I mean, you always know that HBO will get great actors. It seems to be, they're just reliable at that. They got Oscar nominee Emily Watson from Breaking the Waves, Punch-Drunk Love, as Valya Harkonnen, who's probably the standout. She is tough as nails, and she won't let anything get in her way. What I like is that the show is about the Bene Gesserit. So they're about this sisterhood of space witches who are kind of a little bit more than human. They kind of train themselves to be supernaturally proficient at things like lie detecting. We see the origins of the voice. Take out your knife. Do stuff with it.
Listen to our podcast.
Listen to our podcast. Like, subscribe. I liked that they depicted the Bene Gesserit in a somewhat sympathetic light, but they still very much keep the angle of they are manipulating things. Some people do not like that they are trying to kind of bend the Imperium, the universal government, towards what they want. Is it good? Is it bad? It doesn't give you really firm answers, which I like. And the two main characters, Valya Harkonnen, Emily Watson, and her sister, Tula Harkonnen, played by Olivia Williams, who's also great. I've seen her in a lot of stuff over the years. Have some really cool, like a good dynamic. They're both interesting characters. They both have a lot of depth to them. It struck me, I'm going to spoil something. I hope I can get away with this.
What? So Dan, wait, how much of a spoiler is this? Because
you it's not out yet. Decide.
Do I want it spoiled?
I'm going to judge that this is going to be on the right side of the line, and we can decide afterwards whether it is. So come on, Dan, trust me. I'm will nervous. Bob and weave correctly, probably. It reminded me of The Acolyte in one way that a few episodes in. So The Acolyte, okay, I'll say it in a way that won't spoil anything. A few episodes in, The Acolyte, that Star Wars show nobody liked, switched to like a whole flashback episode, like only a few episodes in. And I remember being like, I don't even care about what's happening in the present yet. You can't get away with this. Dune probably does something very similar. And this time I was totally in, because the similar episode that may not involve flashbacks really told me some cool new things about them. It filled out the world nicely. I was fairly gripped. The twist I didn't see coming. And it was kind of similar structurally, but like content wise, it was worlds better. And I'm like, there's no reason you can't do this well. It's just they didn't do it well, and this one does. Travis Fimmel's in it, as Nicole says, as a mysterious dude named Desmond Hart. He's very entertaining. I will say, it is not a laugh-a-minute show, which I don't think anyone who knows Dune would expect. Like, Dune, I've complained.
Comedy.
I know. I've complained a little about House of the Dragon, just a little bit, in that I feel like I really enjoy the humor on Game of Thrones, and they seem to just not have as many funny bones in their body. Dune, though, Dune's always been so serious. Dune is a self-serious kind of thing.
Yes, it is.
It's a somber, grim sort of place, and that translates here, and I was totally at home with that. The production design is great. I like the starkness of all the architecture they have. It's kind of this future world that's, I wouldn't call it Rome. No, it's not. It's kind of grandeur without warmth, which is very intentional. And you can kind of feel it's been a lot of things. What else do I like? The plot twists are good. Didn't see him coming. The characters are good. The drama is good. There's some spookiness on the edge of stuff that I want to know what happens after this.
Cool.
It's a good show, man. I think people are going to like it.
Leo says, how are the visuals and the CGI? Which I'm curious about, too, because the terrific. That's exciting. The trailer looks sweeping and huge and gorgeous.
They don't listen. It's a TV show. They're not going to go as hard as Paul riding a sandworm.
No.
Although the small glimpses of sandworms we get are very nice. They have some. They have one really cool dream sequence. And I've said, like, the sets, the production design, the kind of places we go look terrific. The costumes look terrific. It looks terrific. Yeah. The spaceships look terrific. I also like that it's not really set on Arrakis really at all. So it feels like Dune, but it feels like a new angle on Dune. A legitimate one, because all these places exist in the Dune universe.
Yes.
Seleucus Secundus, whatever the Bene Gesserit planet was. I forget the name of it. It's something five. You got to have, I don't know what happened to 1 to 4, but here on 5, we're going to train Bene Gesserits. Also, the setting is cool, because in the Dune books, we know we're like thousands of years out. Robert, I am answering it as you ask it. In the Dune books, we know that we're like thousands of years out from this war between man and machine. Basically, Terminator happened and we barely won. And then they outlaw thinking machines, computers, can't use Zoom anymore. It's really not that big of a point in Dune the book or any of its direct sequels.
But in the prequels, there's a whole series about that war called the Butlerian Jihad.
But the prequels weren't written by Frank Herbert, and I'm not gonna blame folk for not being familiar with them,
so which is really fair.
Yeah, so I liked, and so this show is set much closer in time to the machine wars, as they call them, the Butlerian Jihad. Very nice, Daniel. And they kind of deal more directly with computers have just been outlawed because the last time we used them, they tried to kill us all. And that is a fun angle to play with. It is fun to see how some people are like, hey, but do we really have to get rid of them, though? And others are complete zealots who are like, they wiped out nearly all of us. Yes, we do. And they take it very seriously. It mixes with religion. So that was a cool new angle to kind of mix in that was there in the Dune books, but isn't as pronounced. So I liked that it was more of a focus here.
Yeah.
Give it kind of a unique spice, if you will.
Nice. Yeah, it is interesting. I think this was a really smart direction for HBO to take without having seen Dune Prophecy. So it's based on a book, but also not based on a book. It's essentially
set from some books. Yeah,
it's a sequel to a book called Sisterhood of Dune, which is the very beginning of the Bene Gesserit, the proto Bene Gesserit, the Sisterhood. And Tulia Harkonnen is in that book as a little kid. So that makes me, the fact that you've mentioned we get some glimpses of the past makes me interested to see, you know, what touchstones they might have taken from the book, because doing a sequel to it rather than trying to adapt something straight, I think gives them a lot of room. Like, people are shouting out Travis Fimmel in the chat. He's a new character for the show. He's not from any of the Dune books so far as I know. That's really exciting. I can't wait to see what the response to this is.
Me too.
I wonder if they'll do multiple seasons of it.
I don't think it's a spoiler to say, because I've interviewed folk about it and asked that it's out there. It certainly sounds like they're hoping they want to. This does not seem like they were aiming this to be a one and done thing. I haven't seen the last two episodes, but everything I've asked the creators, the actors, are all pointing toward this is not the whole story. They obviously want to do more. Will they do more? That'll be up to you, viewers out there.
Yes. For audio listeners, Dan's finger is on the screen right now. You can picture it in your mind. Is there anything else you want to say about Dune? Because we've got a few other shows to get through today. There's a lot on television right now.
Not particularly. Yeah, I really liked it, and I'm looking forward to seeing more. I will say this.
Yes.
The first 15 minutes is kind of a big lore dump.
Okay.
Frankly, I watched it and I wondered if maybe this was added afterwards or something. It feels a little ungainly. It was my least favorite part.
That's interesting.
I'm usually not the person to say, just watch it. It'll get good at XD minutes. But in this case, I think it's worth powering through the first 15 minutes to get to when the actual story starts and it improves. I wasn't a giant fan of the big lore dump up front.
Okay.
I'm sure some people like it.
Do not judge Dune Prophecy by its opening minutes. Got it.
And that's it. If you don't like the first episode, you can get out. But I never want to be the person who says, like, watch a show you don't like until season two. That's too much to ask. But 15 minutes, I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. 15 minutes is a fair ask. Not every show can be the Penguin that just grabs you right out of the gate with that opening scene that was so, so good.
He killed the marvelous Mr. Maisel right off the bat.
Right. Sorry, marvelous Mr. Maisel. But Dune is not the only thing we're watching this week. The other show that is coming out literally 2 days before Dune. It's kind of insane that both of these shows are dropping this week. Is Silo, which is Apple TV Plus's big science fiction show, probably their second largest after Severance. I think it had the biggest premiere ever for an Apple TV Plus original, but Severance is a force.
The foundation shade is too real.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen Foundation. I love a good weird Lee Pace, but it's just, I don't know. It's just not on the same level, I don't think, as Silo or Severance, even though I did enjoy some things about Foundation from a non-book reader perspective. But yeah, so Silo season two, I have seen the first three episodes, I think, at this point. And good news for the people who liked Silo season one, it is still great. It's excellent. The fact that the first season was kind of this big mystery box sort of show, kind of reminiscent almost of Lost, where it's all these people in the silo. They don't quite know how they got there. They've been living there for so long that the truth of why the silo exists was lost to history. Or so it seems, because there are secrets to be found in the silo, and some people know more than they are claiming. And the first season, spoiler here for Silo, the first season ended with Juliet Nichols, played by Rebecca Ferguson, who remains fantastic in this show, leaving the silo. From Dune! Yeah, yes. Lady Jessica from Dune lives in a bunker is the elevator pitch for Silo. she leaves. She finds out there are other silos out there. And this season picks up pretty much right there, which is around the halfway point of the book this is based on, Wool by Hugh Howey. Now that all of those mysteries are out of the way, now that we know there's untoward stuff that was happening in the silo, that certain manipulations were happening, and we know some of the truths, Silo season two really hits the ground running, in my opinion, because it's not weighted down by that. This season is all about the repercussions of those truths coming out. Whereas the first season was all about figuring out the details. So yeah, I think if you enjoyed Silo season one, you're probably going to be really pleased with Silo season two. Feels very much like the same show. They were already going ahead on filming, I think, by the time season one aired. So the continuity is really good, I feel like.
And it's nice. Is this the time for somebody like me to jump on? I've seen none of Silo, but it's always been on the edge of my awareness to use Dunism.
I just spoiled the end of the first season for you.
Dude, I don't get to be spoiled in this job. It's fine.
Man. Okay, well, I purposely was cagey about some details. Yeah, totally. This is a good time for you to jump on. Silo is one of those shows where it has some goofy elements. Like, you know, it has a lot of very famous British actors in it. But it has a few, like Harriet Walter and Ian Glenn, who played Jorah Mormont. They throw on some like Americanish accents that are kind of funny at times. You know, they've got some kind of silly nicknames, like the Down Deep, which is what they call like the bottom levels of the silo. So some of the lingo is a little goofy. There's a whole plot line about good tape versus bad duct tape. And it makes sense in the story, but when you hear someone be like, the tape, it just sounds ridiculous. But all of that aside, it's a testament to how good Silo is that those little phonetic quirks and things like that, they just kind of add character to the show. And the show is still very good in spite of the occasional bit of goofiness. Yeah, Silo is worth checking out. I think you will know within, watch till season two. No, I'm kidding. Watch the first episode or two. The first episode of Silo very much stands on its own. So I do think it is one where you could enjoy it. It's kind of almost like a microcosm of the show. But it's the first episode is not about Rebecca Ferguson's character. It's about the characters who were important before her. So that's why I say couple episodes in, you'll probably have a pretty good idea of whether you like Silo or not, but it's totally worth trying.
Cool. Yeah. Are they full hour episodes or
45 ish minutes? I think most of the episodes I've seen of season two are around that too. So Silo, I give this show a lot of credit because it's a show that knows it's a show. It's not trying to be an 8 or 10 hour movie. They are TV show length episodes. You can get in, watch it, get out. They move right along quickly. Some of them feel pretty different. They take some weird chances, some risks with stuff. I will say that in the premiere episode, Rebecca Ferguson really does not have a lot of dialogue. She's in most of the episode, and it's nice to see a show do things like that. Where they're, making some interesting choices. So yeah, I think it is definitely worth trying out is my opinion. I don't know that you'll like it more than an HBO show, but it is totally worth a try.
I feel like you're kind of preempting me to be prepared for some bad stuff, but I think you're having a good time and I might watch it tonight over dinner.
Well, I will say that after watching the first couple of season two, I went back and I rewatched the back half of the first season, and it's still great and enjoyable. I'm not trying to undersell Silo here. I enjoyed the show a lot, and I do think that if you like sci-fi, you should definitely give it a chance.
The chat likes it.
Yeah, and Rebecca Ferguson, she is fast becoming one of my favorite actors in the sci-fi space. Because she was great in Dune. This role in Silo is probably my favorite thing I've ever seen her in. I think she is really the core of the show. And she, at this point, I believe, is an executive producer on it. So she is very invested in Silo. And it gives her a lot of really good material. She's an engineer. So it's cool to see the way she solves problems and she's an engineer who's launched into a different job in the Silo, who then has to reconcile what that means and how she deals with this job she has no experience for. She's fantastic. Definitely. I would be so curious what you think of it, Dan.
I'll probably watch, especially if it's that short, tonight, and then I can hop on the train. Everyone in the chat likes it. Nicole recommends it. Robert's a big fan, and Benjack theorizes that after Centuries Underground, the American accent has evolved, which counts for their wacky accents.
Yeah. Val and I joked about that too, that could be the case, because they don't really sound exactly like American accents. They do sound kind of hodgepodged, everyone's got a slightly different accent. So it doesn't seem like they sent everyone to Silo boot camp to have them all sound the same. Common's there too. And Common's got a very specific speech pattern that he uses. So yeah, it's a fun show. I am enjoying Silo a lot. I am really excited to see people's reaction to this season. And that drops. The first episode is Friday, November 15th. And then it's weekly. So Silo is going to run until mid-January. A TV show that feels like a TV show.
Yep. And as that's some good stuff coming in the very near future, Friday and Sunday, Silo and Dune Prophecy. We're eating well.
Yes.
Good for it. I hope everybody enjoys it. And in terms of what just wrapped up, should we get into what we're watching? Because there's been some good stuff there, too.
Yeah, so much. I feel like October was a slightly quieter month. You know, it was really just Agatha and the Penguin. I feel like now it's the deluge. We've got so much media to go through. So, yeah, Dan, what have you been watching, reading, playing, you name it?
I mean, let's talk the Penguin really quick, because that thing wrapped up. It's season, series, whatever, finale on Sunday. And I think the consensus was wrapped up pretty spectacularly, or very, very well. Folk like it. I saw this, the Penguin, like before. I think I watched all that episodes before even the series premiered, because it was that good. Like, we wanted to keep going. Like, I was honestly wanted to see how it went. And now that it's finally over, you can all see why I was so excited to get into it and why I was so high on the show before it came out. Daniel, just how about a fresh perspective? What do you think of the finale?
I loved the finale. I mean, it was dark. The Penguin finale I wish I could remember the Dark Knight quote from the end. It was the finale, maybe not the finale that we wanted, but it was the finale the show needed or whatever. Because, it definitely, it reminded us very clearly that Oz is a villain. It was a really terrible, terrible ending. Like, if you were playing a video game, this is the bad ending. And I loved that for it. And I think, you know, there were a few moments in the Penguin that reminded me of Breaking Bad, like when Sophia first finds out that Oz is the one who killed her brother, things like that. Like, that's the sort of scene where I was like, that feels like a Breaking Bad scene. They even had, so a few things like that. And the finale reminded me of Breaking Bad, too, because you really see Oz just pushed to his limits. I thought all the stuff with his mom.
Yeah, she was great.
That was really interesting, because early in the season, I was like, this is an interesting little bit of backstory with him. His mom is freaking awful. And look at how he turned out. And then you see what happened. And the burden she has carried for her life, and how Oz shaped events as a child. And man, that whole climactic stuff with his mom, I thought was just so good. And how he basically betrays the promise she had him make to her in that final moment. Cause she didn't.
That was rough.
Oof. So I thought the Penguin was really good. I think it's restored my faith a little bit in the DC. I don't want to say the DC universe, because this is Matt Reeves' Batman saga. It's its own very specific thing. But I was kind of, I liked the Batman. I did not love the Batman.
This is better than the Batman.
I think
this show is definitely, I definitely thought I had a better time with it, or was more compelled, more interested than I was with the Robert Pattinson movie, which I liked.
Yeah.
This kicked things up a notch or two.
Yeah, totally. I am really curious how it's going to lead into the Batman parts too. I loved the final shot of the series, which I think we can say this. It's not a huge spoiler. Final shot shows the bat signal come on over Gotham as the Penguin settles into his new situation. And I loved that. And I'm really curious if Oz is going to be the main villain of the next Penguin.
Frankly, I hope so. At this point, I want to see more of him. At this point, to not have him be the main villain of the next movie, I would be disappointed.
Yeah,
if the next thing isn't a full throwdown.
I think it's an interesting spot, because I do want Oz to be, if not probably the main villain, but I think they need at least one new one in the mix too. Like, I think we'll see Catwoman again. I can't remember where I heard this or read this, but that Sophia might appear in the Batman part two. I hope so, because man, Kristen Milioti, she is still my standout performance of that show, which is crazy because Colin Farrell was amazing, but Kristen Milioti is the one that is just like ingrained in my brain. She was so good. Leo says he won't be the main villain of the Batman Part 2. He says Colin Farrell said he only has a few scenes. We're going to have to dig into that a little more.
He said he didn't know how many scenes he had yet, but maybe it was a newer bit of news.
We're going to have to look into it. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting times. I don't think they've started filming that yet. I think there have been some scheduling things, like with the cinematographer, Greg Fraser, who also worked on Dune, like figuring out everyone's schedules to make it work. But yeah, yeah, the Penguin was great.
Yeah, I like that. You mentioned Breaking Bad, but in a show like an antihero show like that, Breaking Bad, Mad Men, whatever, there is like a bit of a redemptive moment at the end. I like that there was nothing.
Yes,
there was nothing in the way of redemptive moment. It was all he is a monster, and I enjoyed that. And I want to see him go down. I'm going to ignore everyone saying that he only has a few scenes. I'm going to assume he has 30, and yeah. That. I loved seeing him rise through the ranks as a morally bankrupt monster. And now I want to see him take a hard fall in the movie. And I'm happy living in my little bubble of make-believe until I am proven otherwise.
I hope he doesn't take a hard fall in the movie. I think I hope that we get more Oz after the Batman Part 2.
That's
I hope
how
they
you
leave
kill
the door
stuff,
open.
Though. That you is... love this now. You love this
true,
now.
True.
But after the Batman Part 2, when Oz is like in the background or a supporting character, and then he gets another show. Listen, the winds can change. It can start to feel stretched out and start to feel tired. Capitalize on the momentum you have is what I would recommend. But we'll see. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah, totally, totally. It'll be interesting. Robert Harris in the chat said, didn't they show another Joker at the end of the Batman? Yes, they did. They actually filmed a whole extra scene with that Joker, who's played by Barry Keoghan. Yeah, so he exists in that universe. If you haven't seen the deleted scene, Robert, you should look it up, because it's a very, very cool scene. Batman basically goes to Arkham and asks the Joker for help on understanding psychopaths while he's chasing the Riddler. But it messed up the flow of the movie, so they cut it. But so the Penguin isn't the only thing we've been watching. Is there anything else that's been on your plate, Dan?
What we do in the shadows, just wrapping that up, enjoying the final season. Good for them. Funny vampires. Hope they go out very, very strong. And so far, so good.
Cool.
I know you're watching Arcane.
I am. Yeah, the first three episodes of Arcane season 2 dropped on Saturday. The next three are coming this Saturday, and then the final three the Saturday after that. Man, Arcane is just a next level good animated series, I think. I loved those first three episodes. They moved a little fast, I thought. They kind of skimmed through a few things. The show uses music videos a little at times, kind of like montage type things with different sorts of animation. Mm-hmm. A little reminiscent of the Spider-Verse movies from Sony in that way. And sure. I think the animation, the Spider-Verse is one of the only things, I think, the only animated things of our moment that feels like it's kind of on the same level as Arcane. It just feels so good to be back. The characters are great. The music is excellent. The animation's solid. The first season ended on a huge cliffhanger with one character, Jinx, who is basically like a Harley Quinn type character, stopping her, beating her sister Vi, who was working with law enforcement to try to stop her, and launching a rocket into this meeting of assembled nobles. So there's a very immediate fallout at the start of Arcane season 2. Mm-hmm. But I thought Leo's talking about Cobra Kai. There was no mercy in Arcane as well. Very, very good start to the season. I cannot wait to see the next few episodes.
I think he meant that there's no mercy in terms of all these TV shows coming at us one after another, after another, after another.
Oh, yeah, maybe. No Mercy is also the catchphrase of Cobra Kai. So Cobra Kai is coming back this week as well for the second installment of its final season. and then the next one is coming in 2025. That's exciting too. I will be watching that. I've enjoyed Cobra Kai all the way through its run. So yeah, we are eating so well in terms of television. It's insane.
And several folk have mentioned, Julie, Martha, that also we got Outlander coming back. And yes. I think 2 weeks. I think we just got screen. We're just getting screeners. Fingers crossed. Looks like it's nice. Happening.
Nice.
So we'll be all over that as well. Man, they really saved all the stuff up. They're also going to put out Wicked. They're going to put out that Gladiator sequel. So they saved it all for November for whatever reason. Thanksgiving weekend, I guess.
You're going
to have turkey, have stuffing, be too tired to move. What are you going to do? Turn on the TV. Go
you
ahead.
Will watch be some full. Stuff. Yes. Just
watch stuff nonstop, front to back, 4 days. And well, they're going to get what they want.
Yeah. I can't fully just only watch stuff because I have so much to read right now as well. Can I shout out a few books here?
Yeah.
As we near the end of our show. So I just finished The Fury of the Gods by John Gwynne. This is the third book in his Norse fantasy series, The Bloodsworn. Really solid ending. I rushed a few things in the ending, but overall, really good, epic, like Ragnarok type ending. I'm sad to see those characters go. The third book in Tasha Suri's Burning Kingdom series, The Lotus Empire, came out yesterday. This is like a Southeast Asian inspired fantasy story, sapphic romance, two characters on opposite sides of this conflict, some nature magic. I loved the first two books in this series. The Jasmine Throne was the first one. So very excited to see how it all wraps up. I have one other I need to shout out because Tor sent it to me, Tor Books,
nice.
The Devils by Joe Abercrombie. So this is the new Joe Abercrombie book that comes out next year. I'm very excited to read it. It sounds hilarious and fun. It is about a group of misfit creatures like vampires and werewolves who work for the Pope, and they have to go on a mission in an alternate Europe to stop a crisis. And then the last thing I need to shout out is that I am current now on the sample chapters for Brandon Sanderson's Wind and Truth, which is the fifth Stormlight Archive books. And that has been awesome. If you are into Brandon Sanderson, his fifth Stormlight book comes out next month, and they've released 30 chapters of this book already.
30. Jeez, how much does that cost you?
That's like 300 pages of the book.
How long is the book?
The book is around 1,350-ish pages. Okay. So
that's a pretty healthy amount. Damn.
They are essentially releasing a quarter of the book before it comes out. I wasn't quite prepared for how special it was going to feel to read this. And because this is like the end of the first arc of the Stormlight Archive, it feels like the end of the first arc. And things are going to be really different after this. So yeah, I'm super excited for that. That book comes out on December 6th, but yeah, that's my reading roundup this show today. Lots of good books coming out.
Man, I don't know where you find the time to come into work, but I appreciate that you do.
I don't sleep very well. Yeah, that's a big part of it.
Very cool. Should we go on to the WIC News lightning round, or we blast through a bunch of stories we couldn't talk about with anybody on the show and give our 20-second takes on them? No more, no less, lest we be buzzed.
Let's do it. Yes.
All right. As usual, in a particular order, but why don't... I'm going to ask you first.
Okay.
No, sorry. Other way. You ask me first.
Okay. The third and final season of What If, Marvel's What If, is coming to Disney Plus on December 22nd, my birthday.
For real? December 22nd? Yes, it is. It's so close to Christmas. That sucks. I'm sorry for you.
I won't be watching What If on that day.
Neither will I. But for anybody who is, go ahead. I'll have my rest of my timer to say, that's nice that your birthday is in the winter time. Does that mean you don't get many presents when you were a kid?
No, I did. But, you know, sometimes people would combine it. Sometimes it's, having a birthday close to a holiday is always a fraught affair.
It is. Okay. I'm going to discuss that.
sorry, what if?
Daniel, the second and final season of Star Wars Andor is coming out on April 22nd of next year, which is not my birthday.
It is not. And I'm glad because I will be watching that one and I wouldn't want to miss your birthday for Andor. I'm excited for Andor. Feels pretty timely with our current moment in the United States. There is one way out and it is watch Andor season 2 and enjoy it and embrace the resistance. No. Yeah. I'm excited for that. So Warner Brothers Discovery is eyeing Oscar winner Mark Rylance to play Dumbledore in its new Harry Potter show.
Yeah, he won an Oscar for Bridge of Spies, been in Wolf Hall, pretty big name actor. Kind of the same thing as the Harry Potter movies where they got all these like famous British actors, Michael Gambon, Maggie Smith, to play all these Hogwarts professors. Could mean for a repeat, which is just a slightly younger generation of famous British actors coming on to be the new cast of Hogwarts folk. It's happening. Yeah. It's all happening. Daniel, I love this story. I was kind of wanting to do it, but it just ends up that you get it. So that Wicked movie is coming out.
Yeah.
No. I want to hear your opinion. That movie, Wicked's coming out. So Wicked released a line of dolls named like modeled after Elphaba and Galinda, the two main characters, the witches, the princess kind of characters. And they printed wicked.com on the back. But it ends up, the actual site is wickedmovie.com. Wicked.com goes for full-on hardcore pornography sex. So all these kids are buying Elphaba dolls, maybe looking up wicked.com, and I believe they get the age verified, but not getting what was advertised. Your thoughts?
I think someone somewhere made a huge damn mistake because how do you print a bunch of toys with the wrong website in the first place, let alone that one? So I think it's hilarious. I mean, I don't have children that are out buying Wicked toys. I'd probably feel differently if I did. So I'm just going to cackle about it at the misfortune because that's what I do. But sorry to parents who've gotten those toys. Oh man, I feel like that movie's a little cursed. I'm interested to see what you think of it when it comes out.
I'm seeing it early, so it'll be interesting.
Oh, nice, nice. Here's an interesting one. Oh wait, you're asking? Yeah, I'm asking you. Okay,
yeah.
Check out this sweet new concept art for Grendel from the Grendel movie starring Jeff Bridges as Grendel.
Yeah, Grendel is a really good book from the 70s by some authors who I forget. I read it when I was in college. I liked it a lot. It's kind of Beowulf, but told from the position of Grendel, his monster or nemesis. Poetic, interesting. It's been an adaptation game before, but I will watch this. Also, we all like Jim Henson puppets, right?
Yes.
To have like the main character be a big Henson puppet, that'll be fun.
That.
And the movie could be good because the book is really cool. So yeah, into that.
That's awesome.
Daniel, it came out, and I think this was another one of those, like, isn't an official announcement, but it did get out that Disney has hired a writer named Simon Kinberg to pen a new trilogy of Star Wars movies. The specifics are not clear, whether it's a sequel, a prequel, or whatever, or something else.
No, they didn't. I don't believe this. It's not going to happen. Hurt too many times by these Star Wars movies. So Simon Kinberg worked on X-Men. He made some decent X-Men movies, some real stinker X-Men movies. I don't know how this will go, but it doesn't matter because it's not going to end up happening, most likely. There's just beyond no faith in Lucasfilm Star Wars movies until they release one in 2053.
Gotcha.
All right. But this is exciting. Macaulay Culkin, Home Alone, Macaulay Culkin, has joined Amazon's Fallout show for season 2 as a, quote, crazy genius type character, end quote.
Fallout. Yeah, that's fun. Macaulay Culkin, millennial child icon who rigged up his house to beat the crap out of Joe Pesci is going to be in the Fallout show. Fine. He can turn into like this kind of countercultural sort of strange remote figure over the years. And I'm sure he can pull off a crazy genius just fine. And yeah, finally, Daniel, totally. something that's near and dear to your heart, Amazon is officially making a Mass Effect TV show based on the video games Mass Effect by Mass Effect. Any thoughts?
Yes, I love Mass Effect. Ironically, I just started a new playthrough of it last week. I think they have a seriously uphill battle ahead of them to make a good Mass Effect show because, you know, it's got a lot of aliens. It's got some really complex story stuff. The Mass Effect games are incredible, but I think this is one of those shows where it has to prove it has something to prove. So we'll see what happens there.
Sure, sure. And that is our show, everybody. Thanks for watching. Thanks for commenting. And if you haven't done it yet, thanks for liking and subscribing. Thanks for going to Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners, telling your family to like and subscribe and to watch us every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. Thank you for going to work and telling your coworkers that we are available in podcast form anywhere they're downloadable, to be it iTunes, YouTube Music, or wherever. Download us. Listen to us on the train, in the car, at the gym, during your morning stroll. Just hang out with us. We have a good time making the show. We'd love to talk to you. And if you want to see more of our writing, go to winterscoming.net. And if you want to see some things that God did not mean you to see, go to winterscoming.com. But we're not
what?
Endorsing what happens there. Bye, everybody.
Take care. Stay safe.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.